Waiting lists, really big issue for people in Northern Ireland, as you will well know.
Yes.
In your role as health minister. They've snowballed under the DUP health waiting lists, haven't they?
Look, I think the hospital waiting lists that we have at the minute are unacceptably long, and too many people are having to wait too long to get the treatment or the appointments or the operations that they require. If we can go back a little bit, we inherited what we thought were high waiting lists. We got stuck into those waiting lists over the first couple of years of the Assembly term and started to invest more money in tackling waiting lists. And that started to see a reduction. And there was a reduction in the number of people who were waiting for longer than the target times and the number of people who were waiting in general. Unfortunately,
look
what
at them
happened,
now.
Unfortunately, we mentioned welfare reform earlier, and that was a separate and discrete issue in and of itself, which caused difficulties, but it had a knock-on effect and ramifications for other areas of government too, not least the ability of what is now my department, the Department of Health, to spend money on waiting lists. Because the department does spend several hundreds of millions every year trying to deal with
welfare reform only took a fraction of the money that your health service spends every year.
Well, there was around £200 million was lost to welfare reform and various fines.
And what's your annual budget in the health service?
The annual budget in the Department of Health is close to £5 billion.
Right,
now.
So £200 million out of £5 billion. So that the public knows. Total number of people waiting for a first outpatient appointment at the end of March 2011, before you come in, 106,227. What is it now? It's 236,000 odds now, December 2015 is when we have the latest figures for that. So it's doubled under your watch.
Well, yeah, and it's not acceptable. And I don't accept that. You know, you're quoting
getting
those figures.
Getting to grips with waiting lists is what's in your manifesto.
Absolutely.
And that's failed under you. Under your party.
Let me go back to I'll repeat the point again. We were getting to grips with waiting lists. They were going down. And what your figures don't, you know, that you've quoted don't show that in subsequent years after what we inherited that we were taking them down. What happened was that our department, and yes, £200 million is a large amount of money. In the context of the department's budget, it would be a small amount of money. But if we had got our share of that amount of money, which would have been around £100 million, we would have invested that in waiting lists. And that would have kept them under a degree of control. What I mean by a degree of control is at the same period, around the same period, sort of from 2012 to 2014, there has been a 12% increase in the number of people actually presenting themselves for appointments. I want to make the point in terms of getting to grips with them, because we have been getting to grips with them. You'll recall that we invested £40 million in the last financial year. I've made a commitment to spend an additional £30 million. And this is on top of the several hundreds of million pounds that trusts already spent. And that is making an impact. And because you've quoted some figures about what the waiting lists were. I want to give you some. These are March figures. So at the end of the last financial year, the number of people who were waiting more than 9 weeks for an outpatient appointment had dropped by 13% compared to December, and the number of people waiting for an inpatient appointment more than 26 weeks had dropped by 17%. Now, there's still a long way to go.
Well, there is a long way to go, Simon.
But the investment that we're making, that £40 million and the £30 million, so the £70 million additional that we're investing, which will ensure that around 150,000 additional people get the treatments and the operations and the procedures that they require, it is starting to make an impact. Now, I know it's not perfect. I know there is a long way to go, and that's what we need to continue to make that sort of investment. And our manifesto makes a commitment to it is the one big spending commitment that we make in our manifesto, which is £1 billion more for health over the budget period.
We want to spend
a significant portion of that on getting to grips with waiting lists, and we believe that we need an additional £80 million a year each year over the next Assembly term to get to grips with waiting lists.
Well, actually, when I was lying in bed reading your manifesto, as I do, right?
Oh dear.
Goodness. That's what I have to do for a living. And I thought to myself, is this ambitious from the DUP? Because here's what you're actually promising within your manifesto. The headline says getting to grips with waiting lists. And then you say you're having a target of, quote, getting waiting lists well below 2013 levels by 2021.
Yeah.
5 years from now, below 2013 levels. And of course, you don't define what well below is. So you give yourselves lots of wriggle room there. And it's going to take you another 5 years to do it.
Is that
not lightweight?
No, I think it's worth. Look, anybody who comes on to your show and makes promises that they can eradicate waiting lists or cut them rapidly, has answers or questions to answer around, well, where would you get the money from? Where would you take it from to do that? And whether what they're proposing to invest is sufficient. I think it is appropriate to be honest and upfront and straightforward with people. And I think people understand this when you say to them, because they understand the pressures that the health service is under. And we are saying we need to invest a minimum of £80 million more on top of the several hundred millions that Trust already spend on operations and treatments for people.
So it became a mess when under your watch, now it's going to take another 5 years just to get back to where you started.
I don't accept the fact that it's become a mess because of what we did or what we didn't do.
It's a mess for the 236,000 people waiting, and you're the minister.
I go back to the point again that we have been, because of the efforts that we have been making in the last 6 months to invest £40 million additional, a commitment for £30 million more this year, we are getting to grips with them and they are starting to go in the right direction. So the number of people waiting for outpatient appointments...
5 more years.
...down by 13%.
People waiting 5 more years.
Clearly, this is not people who are on the list now who will have to wait 5 years.
Yes.
This is the total figure. And obviously, more people will present themselves. I mentioned to you about a 12% increase in our over the last assembly term in the number of people who are coming to hospitals referred by their GPs or whoever for appointments. So there is a huge challenge in terms of dealing with that additional demand that there is, as well as trying to remove people from the waiting list who are already there.
Do you know what the 2013 levels are or were?
For waiting lists.
This target you're setting yourselves.
I can't remember what they were specifically, but they were significantly lower than what we inherited in 2011, and we want to get them back below that level. Because
what does well below mean? What percentage does well below mean? 10%, 20%, 50%.
I think we want to do what we're saying there. We want it well below. We want it
What's
significantly
well below.
Below.
Mean? Well, this is a target. You have a target. Of well below.
Yeah, we want
well,
the
below
well below
means nothing.
Well, it means well below. It means significantly below. It means
what's the difference between below and well below?
It means several percent more or lower than what it was in 2013. And the significance of 2013.
That's a little below then.
Well, I think for those who will be getting the treatments that they need, I don't think they will characterise it like that. This is an issue which. And the significance of 2013, Stephen, is that was the time in which welfare reform penalties started to kick in, started to bite, started to deprive the executive of that £200 million that it could have spent on other public services.
Cancer, big, big issue. Yeah. People write to me in this programme about funds for cancer and treatment for cancer and an awful lot. You say within your manifesto that you will provide more nurse specialists for cancer. How many?
Well, we have...
It doesn't say.
Well, I can be quite clear about what we're doing in respect of that. A few weeks ago, my department and the Health and Social Care Board signed an agreement with Macmillan, who are a fantastic charity doing great work in this area, and also the Friends of the Cancer Centre. And together and combined, we have found £11.5 million worth of funding across ourselves and those two charities to provide 60 more cancer nurse specialists in Northern Ireland.
60 more?
60 more. At this minute in time...
When, Simon?
And this is going to be done over the next number of years, because obviously we have to go through recruitment to get people in place and training and have them in their posts.
How much will that cost?
It's costing £11.5 million, which we have. I think the cancer nurse specialists do a fantastic job. At the minute, anybody who is unfortunately gets a diagnosis for breast cancer will get access to a cancer nurse specialist. There are a range of other cancers, as you know, which people unfortunately don't get access to cancer nurse specialists. They do a fantastic job. I've talked to people actually even over the last number of days in the campaign trail who will talk to you about the fantastic work that cancer nurse specialists are able to do for their loved ones, sometimes towards the end of their life and sometimes to help them to recover. And this is and it's not just cancer, I think there are a range of other specialisms as well where nurse specialists can do a fantastic job at relieving pressure.
So how many did you say? How many more nurses?
This is 60 more cancer nurse specialists over the next number of years with an investment of £11.5 million, which we have done in concert and in partnership with Macmillan and the Friends of the Cancer Centre. And I'm really grateful for the fact that I think that's actually as well quite remarkable that here you have government working with charities to do something that is of practical benefit like that.
Let's deal with some of the moral and ethical issues. In the next assembly term, will the DUP continue to do everything it can to block same-sex marriage in Northern Ireland? Your manifesto is just one passing reference to this issue. Page 20. The DUP has, quote, stood by its commitment to family values and marriage and will continue to do so.
Yeah, well, I think
so. The question, will the DUP continue to do everything it can to block same-sex marriage in Northern Ireland?
I don't think it'll come as any surprise to you or anybody listening that the DUP will continue with its clear and consistent view on this issue and will oppose any redefinition of marriage.
So you're not open to listening to the community, not open to changing your mind. It's set in stone, and that's the DUP policy forever.
Look, I think this is an issue, and there are many issues where, you know, we are clear and we have been consistent in our view. And it's not just, of course, the DUP in the Assembly who are, as much as some might want to characterise it as such, it's not just the DUP who are of this mind in the Assembly. There are people across a range of different parties who have supported.
You've been the leading lights on it, though, haven't you? You've been a very high-profile...
Well, certainly we
advocate
are,
of it, which you're entitled to do within the Assembly.
And we're also, we've been the biggest party in the Assembly, so perhaps that amplifies it a little as well. But we're not the only party in the Assembly who take that view. We're not the only, you know, there are individuals and other parties who have taken different views and individuals within parties who have taken different views but perhaps haven't voted on the issue.
Even if there is a majority of MLAs who vote for same-sex marriage in Northern Ireland, will you continue to use the petition of concern?
Well, you're talking
to
about...
block it?
You're talking about, you know, hypothetical situations that may or may not happen
in the
future.
And that hypothetical's happened before, of course.
And it happened many, many times, and there was a very clear view of the Assembly at that time, which I think is reflective of a view that there is in wider Northern Ireland society. But, you know, this is something that, as I said, we have a clear and consistent view on. And, you know, we hold fast to the argument that marriage shouldn't be redefined. Northern Ireland is, of course, and again, some people try to portray Northern Ireland as a place apart in respect of this. Well, we're not the only country in the world. In fact, the majority of countries in the world have not redefined marriage.
So the question was, will you continue, even if the majority of MLAs vote for same-sex marriage, will your party continue to use a petition of concern?
The petition of concern is there and it has been subject of some scrutiny. It was part of some discussions around the Fresh Start talks. We take each issue as it comes up in the Assembly and decide whether a petition of concern is appropriate or not. And we would do so with this issue and a range of other issues that, as they present themselves in the next Assembly term.
What does this mean? It's a pretty simple question, isn't it? If the majority of MLAs in the Assembly vote for same-sex marriage, will your party continue to use a petition of concern to block it?
Look, we are firm in our view on this issue, and look, we have used it.
The question is the petition of concern. We have used it.
I imagine that we would use it again if there is a threat to changing the definition of marriage, which we don't agree with.
Okay, and for those people who are listening to this program now who are gay, who want a sense that they're equal in this community, why can't they get married?
I will deal with the issue of around equality on this matter. This is, I have spoken several times in the debate around the several debates that there have been on same-sex marriage and redefining marriage, and both as a backbench Assembly member at a time and also then in my role as Finance Minister with marriage law falling under that department's remit. And at no stage, and I would defy anybody to go back and look at the remarks that I made or indeed any of my party colleagues made and find any hostility towards anybody who is gay. None whatsoever.
Are you kidding? Are you kidding me? Your political party is the party that has used language like repulsed when they're talking about homosexuality, when they have used words like abomination. You've even claimed Hurricane Katrina was God's judgment on New Orleans because of a gay event. Not your party. You kidding me? Because you just said, or any other member of our party.
Well, I'm glad you clarified that because I didn't say that. I wish a
DUP councillor said that.
And if you listen to what I was saying, I said that I defy anybody to go back and look at the contributions that were made in that debate. My contributions in that debate, and indeed anybody else who from the party who's spoken, I think there was four or maybe five debates on this issue over the last Assembly term. I can't remember specifically how many. And we have always been respectful and sought to be respectful of those who are gay. And not say anything that was offensive.
When you say we, you mean the DUP?
Yes, in terms of their contributions in those on the debates on this issue.
No. Let's talk about the DUP's contribution to the whole debate as to how gay people are looked upon in this community. Is it time for your party, Simon Hamilton, to apologise to gay people in this country when your party has allowed members to talk about them being repulsed by their sexuality? Is it time for your party to stand up and say sorry?
People will have, for a range of different reasons, strong views on lots of different matters. And, you know, like, I think that people, no matter what their background, no matter what their sexuality, what their race, what their religion, they're all valuable members of Northern Ireland society. And I think we should be respectful of others in the way we
Is your party repulsed by black people? Is your party repulsed by Chinese people? Or are some members of your party just repulsed by people who are gay, Simon?
Don't be ridiculous. Don't be ridiculous. And, you know, I'm coming at this issue on the basis of we should be respect. This is an issue and a debate, but sometimes does descend into this sort of level, and it should be one that is held respectfully and not, you know, where people are calling each other names or saying things that are. I think that this is the debate and discussion loses something when we get to that.
Well,
level.
I
think that we should raise a standard.
I can
of this
move
debate,
this on
just as we do raise a standard. Other debate.
Well, I can move this on. Do you think the DUP should give a commitment to gay people in Northern Ireland that never again will they use language about someone's sexuality like repulsed, abomination, or indeed blame a hurricane on God's judgment on a gay event?
I don't want anybody, and I'm sure most people, vast, vast, vast majority, if not everybody in Northern Ireland would agree, that we don't want anybody to say anything that offends or hurts anybody on the basis of their race, religion, political background, or indeed their sexuality as well. So, you know, this is an issue where, and I made the point around, you know, the contributions in the debate were sought to be balanced. They didn't seek to be inflammatory in any way. They sought to be balanced around the issue. And you mentioned the issue of equality, and you know, we made points in the debate around how it actually wasn't an equality issue.
My question, Simon, is will your party give a commitment that it will not use language that has been used in the past by members of your party, like repulsed? That's a very strong word about a human being, indeed a human being's sexuality. To be fair to them, they weren't describing the human being, they were describing the act and the sexual orientation. Is your party at a stage, fresh start, where it will not describe someone's sexuality like that?
I can't control what anybody will say, but clearly we don't want... We don't want anybody to be saying, whether they're in our party or not in our party or in other parties, saying things about people which are offensive or hurtful.
I've only one other question, this, then we'll move on. Is it natural to be gay?
Look, there are people who, you know, are gay, and I believe that that is the way that they are. They're born. That's their part of their. Their makeup, and you know that's just who they are, and I respect everybody who's, you know.
So that's the way they're born. So it's natural to be gay.
I don't always agree with the policy positions that people who are homosexual take. You know, and I think I'm entitled, and this is, you know, one of those things that I think
absolutely
concern.
And that's about gay marriage.
Yes,
we've moved on from that.
Yes, and I think sometimes the debate around these issues, you know, we're told that if we take a different view to that, we are told that we are intolerant. But actually, you know, it's perfectly normal and right to take a different policy position.
Of course it is.
But that is distinct and different from the person themselves. And I can respect the person.
Yeah.
I can respect the person, but disagree with their view on a range
of
different
issues. And I do want to move on. So a yes or no answer would be perfect. Is it natural to be gay?
Well, you know, people are gay. That is the way they are. You know, and it is not for me, you know, to judge whether
it's not for you to say yes or no.
It's not for me to judge them or how they are the way that they are any more than it is for them to judge me.
Let's move on to you've refused to say that whether you believe it's natural to be gay or not. Abortion. One simple question: should abortion on grounds of fetal abnormality be allowed in the health service here in Northern Ireland?
This is a complex issue. As you know, Stephen, you've devoted many hours to talking about this issue on your show, and it is an incredibly difficult issue. It is an issue that I think, again, requires respect. It requires us to be careful in our language around it, and I think it requires us to be reflective and sensitive to all a range of issues that are associated
with
it.
What's the DUP's position and what's your view?
Like the DUP has taken a... And you'll recall that there was a debate later on in the Assembly term where some sought to change the law in respect of particularly terminations around fetal abnormalities. And I don't think that was the right way. And the party took a view, and Arlene was very, very clear on this, that this was not the way to make law on such a serious and sensitive issue. And we suggested at that time that this issue of fetal abnormalities and terminations in those circumstances required further, calmer, cooler reflection.
But you're standing for election.
Yeah.
You are. So I'm asking your personal opinion on that question. Should abortions on grounds of fetal abnormality be allowed in the health service here in Northern Ireland?
Well, you know, I think you are familiar, because you've discussed this issue a lot, and I know that you study these things carefully, Stephen. And there are clear grounds in Northern Ireland where a termination is lawful.
Yes.
And it is all centred around the life of the mother or the impact in the long term, or whether it's long term or permanent impact on the mother's physical or mental health. And obviously that can include in some circumstances.
But the burden's on the woman to clear that hurdle on top of everything else she's gone through.
Well, I don't,
that she's going to suffer a long-term mental health issue.
I don't like characterising it in these sort of, you know, a hurdle and all of those things. That is the law. And there is clear that there is widespread support for a pro-life position to describe it like that.
So you don't think the law should be changed?
Well, what we have done, as I was trying to explain, is Arlene made it clear during that debate that the party wanted to take longer to reflect on this issue, wanted to set up a working group of clinicians and legal experts to take a look at this issue. And a lot of people
past the election,
A lot of people, this is an issue which has to be looked at and considered. So, you know, whether it's
you haven't considered it over the last 2 years?
Yeah. Well,
when was Sarah Yurt's case?
Well, there are
2013.
There are lots of difficult cases, as you know, and people have to, in the health service, have to deal with these difficult cases on an ongoing basis. That's why we were keen and very pleased that the executive agreed to publish new guidance in respect of termination of pregnancy. And a lot of people told me that couldn't happen.
So
a lot of people told me that we will never get that agreed. And we got that. The executive has agreed. And the executive has also taken a positive view in respect of setting up the working group that Arlene proposed. And we've now got agreement with the Department of Justice, with David Ford, to get Department of Justice input into that.
So the DP doesn't know what its position is until the working group decides.
Well, is it not reasonable that on an issue as complex and multi-layered as this, and with so many different aspects to it, and with a range of different views in our society, that we take some time to calmly reflect. And I make the point again that, as with other issues that we've discussed, it is not just the DUP who take this view. When we oppose the changes to the law that were hastily put through, or sought to be hastily put through, it wasn't just the DUP.
I know, but we're talking about the DUP today.
It is, but
that's what we're doing.
But I don't want you or listeners to sort of characterise this as only the DUP taking this position.
No,
this is a broader view that is taken across Northern Ireland society, across our community divide, and all of that.
We're trying to establish what the DUP stands for. When you stand for election, should women who have illegal abortions, in other words, they've taken pills bought online, be criminalised?
Well, I think as a first starting point, I think that, you know, people shouldn't be taking any medication that isn't prescribed to them. It is dangerous to do that in a range of different areas.
Should they be criminalised?
It isn't. We have a law in Northern Ireland. It is not my job, whether I'm health minister or not, to interfere in what the police do, or indeed what the Public Prosecution Service do, or what our judiciary do. In fact, we've jealously guard the independence of our criminal justice system and their ability to take those decisions.
We've heard the Royal College of Midwives advise people in Northern Ireland not to tell doctors and nurses if they've taken the pill. Do you agree with that?
There is a responsibility, like any. This is obviously focusing on one particular narrow area, but there are a range of other circumstances where if health professionals see what they believe to be a breach of the law, that there is a duty on them
to report
that.
It's not the question.
That.
And you know it's not the question.
The question is pretty
specific, right?
Yeah.
You know that the Royal College of Midwives have said to a patient going into a hospital, do not tell the nurse or the doctor. And you know the dangers of that. Because the nurse or doctor might not know how to save their life because they haven't told them they've taken those pills. I'm asking a politician standing for election, do you agree with the Royal College of Midwives that they shouldn't tell the health service that they've taken an illegal pill?
That's a matter for the Royal College of Midwives. Right. They've taken that view. It's a matter for the individual themselves. And these are incredibly difficult, tragic sets of circumstances and cases. And they require you know, a bit more sensitivity, I think, than in terms of their handling, and I think sometimes they have got. And these are incredibly difficult positions that everybody in these sectors are going. I know the case that has obviously brought this to the fore, and I think it is a tragedy on all sides.
Let's see if you'll answer this question. Infrastructure investment, yeah. Big part of your manifesto. It says, detailed discussions have been ongoing about leveraging and further finance from the European Investment Fund with the aim of creating a $1 billion fund to support the private sector in financing schemes.
Yeah.
A $1 billion investment fund. That's ambitious.
It is. It's something that I know quite a lot about because it owes its origins to the time whenever I was Minister of Finance. And we receive some of the money that we get for capital investment. So that's investment in new roads and new hospitals, new infrastructure, new buildings. We get some of that in what is called, excuse the sort of technical terms, but this is what Treasury calls it, financial transactions capital, which has to go to the... not the public sector, so the private sector or, for example, housing associations. And we were having some difficulties in getting all of that money spent, and I came up with an idea where we could create this fund, this investment fund. We had discussions which we could put that into and use that deposit of substantial millions by the executive to leverage in other finance from elsewhere.
So if that's a great idea, am I getting this wrong? Does your party not want us to leave the EU?
Well, you are getting it wrong.
Yeah. Do you not lose that money if we leave the EU?
No, you don't. If you want to go online and look at the European Investment Bank, who I met in Luxembourg, looked at their, if you want to look at their website, you'll see it very, very clearly. I met with them.
Who we are, I've got it.
Yeah, well, that's one page of several, probably thousands of pages on their website. But you will see...
Our shareholders, it says, are the European Investment Bank, the European Union.
Yes, that's
so
right.
You don't lose it. Because I do want to move on. We don't lose it if you're out of the EU.
No, you don't, because that is one page about who they are. It doesn't tell you what they do.
Okay.
And it doesn't tell you where they do it. And if you go by, I'm happy to sit and wait for you to go and look at their website, you will see that they are investing in projects in Africa, in Asia.
Fair enough.
And the last time I looked, none of those were in Europe.
Fair enough. What is the... Arlene Foster talked last week about no more squandering money in Irish language schools. What exactly is the DUP policy on Irish language schools?
Well, there is great concern. Some people obviously choose to educate their children in Irish. That is a matter for them and their choice. I think there is great concern, an understandable concern, out in the community whenever you see schools which the education authority or the department say are unviable with maybe, say, 100 pupils
you're
in them.
Talking about concern. Will the DUP block new Irish language schools?
Let me just develop the point. So there are schools...
Well, answer the question.
There are schools where maybe 100 pupils or so who are in that school and they're told that is unviable. And then a few miles away, they see a school opening with 10 pupils. And people just... don't see that as fair. They don't see that as sensible, reasonable in any way, shape or form. And I think what we do need to do is, given the excess number of school places that there are in Northern Ireland, the empty school desks that there are in Northern Ireland, we need to be very careful about where we're investing that precious money. Will you block new ones?
Well, that's the question.
There are schools that, for various reasons, get blocked in terms of opening or their expansion. And it's not unreasonable to block schools, including Irish medium schools,
where they are not viable. Will you block new Irish language schools, all of them, or will you let some of them through?
Well, if people want to, I think this has to form part of a wider debate and discussion around shared education.
Another wider debate. Another discussion.
Well,
set up a working group on it.
We've long-standing problems, as you know. You're very flippant about these things, but you know fine well that divided education is at one of the hearts of one of the problems that we have in Northern Ireland. We need to try to bring pupils and students together and to be educated together.
You see, the DUP is committed to establishing the Institute of Ulster Scots.
Well, I think it's
committed.
It's,
no working groups there.
Well, there's
how much will that cost?
There's a huge... I mean, this is something that we would develop in government, something that we have been supportive of for a long time. We haven't put a price to it because
you're committed to it.
It depends on what it would do and the scale of it and so forth.
So committed to an open check. You don't know how much it costs.
No, it's not clearly an open.
Well, you're committed to it. You don't know how much it would cost.
We want to do something, and clearly we want to develop the details of it. And there's very good reasons for that because there is a clear imbalance in terms of where cultural spending has been between Irish and Ulster Scots and other cultures.
I want to talk about the bridge.
Yes.
Last year's
BBC 4 TV programme.
Last year's DUP manifesto for the general election proposed a feasibility study into a tunnel or bridge from Larne to Scotland. Mm-hmm. What happened to that grand plan?
Well, I suppose you're saying
drop it because it was daft?
No, well, interestingly, last July, a few months after that was in our Westminster election, and it's something that we've said, that, you know, it's not building the bridge, we want to look at a feasibility study into the bridge or a tunnel. A few months after, I think it was about July of last year, the BBC on its own website ran a story about a bridge between Denmark and Germany, a 12-mile-long bridge between, actually, it was a tunnel, sorry, which has four lanes and railway
never
lines.
Never mind about that.
And the BBC, did the BBC deride or
has
criticise the bridge from Denmark to Germany? No, it didn't.
Has the bridge
it
been
didn't.
Dropped?
No, it hasn't been dropped.
Right,
in sense
still
of,
there.
You know, this
why is it not in this year's manifesto then?
Well, it's something we committed to in a previous manifesto.
So it's still happening.
And it is something, and just let's be clear, we want to look into a feasibility study into whether it's something, and because this is about increasing and improving connectivity.
Working group.
To the mainland, to ensure that there's benefits for tourism, there's benefits for the wider
economy. We have literally 2 minutes.